And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 22nd of February, 2024. And you're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 to noon show. How are you all keeping today? I hope you're doing very well indeed, and we look forward to your company for the next 3 hours. Lots coming up, as you can imagine, including, scheduled at least, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. He's going to be joining us to, I presume, campaign for a yes vote in the forthcoming referenda. He's coming up a little later on the show, and so much more besides, so stay tuned for all of that. Get involved in the conversation, as always, and start your own too. WhatsApps or text to 086 60 25 000. Feel free to send your WhatsApp voice notes if you want to that number, that WhatsApp number. Or give us a call on 074 91 25 000, where Caroline is taking your calls. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And you can join us on our social media as well. Watch us on your big screen or your Fire Stick. Your smart big screen, that would be, of course. Most TVs being sold now are YouTube. Type in Highland Radio Ireland. You'll see we're live and you can watch us there. Take us on your mobile devices on that app or on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. And we're also on X, formerly Twitter. Right, let's look at a busy morning, as always, for the newspapers. The Tyrconnell Tribune first. In an ongoing issue over the supply of concrete blocks and products to developments where Donegal County Council is involved, Councillor Michael McBride has sought clarification from Lifford. He has contacted the chief executive of the council to establish why the Indigenous quarries in the county are excluded from the process. He said that the council has plans to have 1,200 homes constructed in the coming years, and Donegal quarries face serious issues if they are excluded from the tendering process. Councillor McBride has been in contact with the council as a result of quarry companies who've told him they're now excluded from providing concrete to the council and that only one international company is the preferred option. I would have thought that would have been an open process in terms of those types of for materials. I would have thought it had to be under law. Because we often hear about that. I would be interested to see if they're being excluded, on what grounds, what is the exemption that's probably applying. Well, the issue was raised during a housing meeting in Lifford on Wednesday, and a senior official said they have no clear policy on the issue but will issue their response next week. As I say, I thought it all had to be sort of open tendering and all that kind of stuff to ensure best value for money for the taxpayer. The Donegal's lead this morning. The Donegal Rape Crisis Centre is now offering counselling services to children as young as 12 years old, and staff say the demand for help from young children is on the rise. Up until recently, the centre offered its services for adults and children aged 14 years and older. However, in order to meet a growing demand for help from children, the age limit has now been reduced to 12. The Derry News this morning, tributes paid to veteran Republican Tony Hassan. Tributes have flooded in following the death of former long-serving Derry councillor Tony Hassan. The veteran Republican died on Monday following a long illness. He served as a Sinn Féin councillor for over 20 years. In the last few days, many warm tributes were paid to Tony, who championed the building of much-needed social housing across the city, but especially in the greater Shantello area. On to the Nationals now, and we'll start with the Irish Independent. A Labour senator confronted executives from social media site X with harrowing details of violent and sexually abusive posts she had received on the platform. At a private briefing yesterday, Annie Hoey read out posts about her on the site formerly known as Twitter during a private committee hearing with two executives from the Elon Musk-owned social media giant. Ms. Hoey, who previously disclosed she was raped in her 20s, referred to posts saying she deserved to be raped and that made disparaging references about her weight and sexuality. X sought and got agreement from the committee to brief members in private on its safety, disinformation and media literacy policies yesterday at Leinster House. The company defended these policies at a detailed opening statement in the committee. However, speaking afterwards, several members publicly criticised the response they received at the meeting, with the accusations that X was not taking their concerns about the platform seriously. And really, the situation with X is this, that people can say anything they want about you. X doesn't really do anything about it. The onus then is on the person who might be the victim of such comments to lobby X to get them removed through an email or whatever it might be. And also, quite interesting in that exchange is that X says that it will implement the new hate speech laws as they are defined in the Irish Constitution and through the courts, that it will fully implement them. So obviously you would have Elon Musk saying one thing using his Twitter X handle, but they are saying that they will implement and abide by the hate laws, the new updated hate laws when they are introduced. The Irish Times this morning talks of tensions rising between RTE's Oireachtas committees. A turf war has emerged between two Oireachtas committees examining the RTE controversy. In a letter earlier this month, Fianna Fáil TD Niamh Smith, the chair of the Oireachtas Media Committee, warned that there had been considerable overlap between it and the Public Accounts Committee. She wrote that this had resulted in duplication of witnesses attending, with the same witnesses being invited to attend at two separate committee hearings on the same topic, in some cases on the same day. In the letters to the committee on parliamentary privilege and oversight, which is considering whether to extend a special dispensation given to PAC to investigate RTE, she said that two committees concurrently covering the same topic had resulted in negative public commentary. So obviously, you know, I'm sure the people are well, I'm sure the people are well-meaning in asking their questions, but listen, there is a bit of publicity in it too. It's good publicity too. The clips get taken off and be put up in social media. So the politicians are sort of jockeying, I suppose, that they are the ones being seen to ask these questions. National debt is high per person. What would you say the national debt is? It's €42,000. So every man, woman and child in this country, we owe €42,000. And it is kind of interesting in that we're supposedly a wealthy country with an economy doing great. There's many things that seem to contradict that in everyday life. But I think one of the biggest contradictors is the national debt. Ireland's national debt has fallen slightly to €42,000 per person in what is one of the highest gross public debt levels in the world. The figures published yesterday indicate that public debt represented 76% of the modified gross national income last year. Minister for Finance Michael McGrath said that Ireland's debt of €223 billion was very significant debt for a small open economy. Ireland's chief economist John McCarthy said there are only a handful of countries in the world that have a higher level of per capita debt, that's per person debt. These include Japan, Belgium and Italy. Mr. McCarthy said the decrease in public debt per person is both because the number of people in Ireland has increased and the amount of debt overall has fallen, but it still stands. I remember this. Was it at 38,000 per person a few years ago? And it was like, oh my God, we're in bother here. But it's actually gone up since quite considerably, albeit there has been a slight dip recently. The Farmers Journal, the number of TB outbreaks in Irish cattle herds has hit a 10-year high. Herd incidents, the number of herds that experienced a new TB breakdown in a 12-month period, increased to 4.89% last year from 3.64% in 2014. TB reactor numbers also continued to increase, with reactor numbers up 5,500 head to reach almost 29,000 in the last year. This was a 24% jump between 2022 and 2023. We discussed this extensively on this programme over many, many years, and this is proposals for an opt-out system, which is supposedly going to transform organ donations. New laws that will herald an opt-out organ donation system are to be introduced after a landmark moment in the Oireachtas. The legislation yesterday reached the Seanad and means everyone automatically becomes an organ donor unless they opt out. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly announced plans last summer for the country to move from an opt-in system for organ donation to an opt-out system. The Human Tissue Bill 2022 allows for organ donation after a person dies unless the deceased has previously opted out. Now, I don't know how that works in terms of the reality of that situation where there is someone maybe on life support, on a ward, and the family is there. Maybe the issue hasn't been discussed with the family. and they say, well, this person has not opted out, so we're taking their organs. What happens in that situation? Like, has it really changed significantly? Because I think that was that is and remains one of the barriers as to why some organs aren't donated. So what happens in that situation? But also, are you happy about this, that from now on, legally, your organs are up for grabs unless you opt out? Minister Donnelly, whose department has pledged an extra $1.6 million to boost transplants this year, expressed his belief yesterday that the new system will result in an increase in organ donation. He said it's a really important step. It's been a long time coming. Now, it's well rehearsed, the debate, the conversation. Will you be opting out? Are you happy now that you are automatically being opted in? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. The crackdown on so-called dodgy boxes continues. Irish dodgy box sellers were targeted by a UK copyright watchdog in a major crackdown spanning 10 counties. Fact issued 22 legal warnings to pirates flogging modified Amazon Fire 6 or other fully loaded smart TV devices. So this is not necessarily your hosts, which are often based outside Ireland. These are often individuals that will buy, say, 50 slots from whoever hosts these streams, and then they'll go on Facebook, which is really quite foolish. They'll go on Facebook and offer these products fully loaded, but they're sort of subcontractors, if you know what I mean. This isn't really targeting, I don't think, the big boys who are actually hosting the streams. This is people that buy slots off them and then resell them. They're resellers, effectively. The organisation said their cease and desist letters warned sellers to stop all illegal streaming activity. They said if they didn't stop, they risked facing criminal prosecution. A dodgy box allows users to access illegally streamed content such as movies, sport and pay-per-view events, along with regular TV channels. Now, I wasn't sure it was actually fully illegal to stream, but certainly illegal to download. But anyway, be that as it may, it's only a matter of time, I would imagine, before the telecommunication companies, if they haven't already, start throttling. They can tell which ports the information comes down on through your internet and router. And there's an awful lot of throttling of those ports in Britain and elsewhere. And it's only a matter of time before that starts here. If it hasn't started already, I wouldn't know. And finally, in the Sun, maybe you're bored of EastEnders, Coronation Street, Fair City and the rest. Well, apparently, they won't need actors anymore. Because AI will be able to create soaps, TV soaps, in the next 5 years. I was looking at some of the video. For those of you who aren't aware of what AI is, it's artificial intelligence, and it is incredible how far advanced it has got. Just to give you an example, there are programs now where you could type, you know, puppies playing in snow with green trees in the background, and the artificial intelligence will create that. It doesn't take an image of a dog and Photoshop it into snow. The artificial intelligence now can literally write it, create it, so that very lifelike dogs are playing in snow with the snow flying around the place and their individual hairs moving around. As I say, this is not sort of ripping images from the internet and creating a picture. It, from scratch, can create this scene. It's really quite remarkable if you've never seen it. And that's where we're at now. That's the stuff the public can access. So what can actually be done beyond that is unbelievable. Well, this is a side note, TV soaps. There's far better uses for it, or worse uses. TV soaps could be made by chatbots within 5 years, a director warned. In worrying news for the cast and crew of Corrie Emmerdale and EastEnders, James Haves yesterday said artificial intelligence was well on the way to replacing humans, adding, the genie's out of the bottle. TV veteran Haves, best known for Doctor Who and fellow sci-fi series Black Mirror, told UK MPs he was swayed by the launch of tech called Sora, made by free-to-use AI system ChatGPT. And listen, at the end of the day, too, even platforms like this, like radio, it's capable now. It's capable now whereby you can have artificial intelligence present music, choose music, read from newspapers. So who's to say how it will affect soaps, radio, TV, whatever. But it is really remarkable. Even the stuff that we can access now, what it's capable of doing, even last year or the year before, this might not interest lots of you, but anyway, AI struggled with hands and fingers and digits. So you'd get really good videos created, but you could see it was AI. Now, this year already, as I mentioned that at one example, it's improved because it self-learns. It literally self-learns. It's crazy stuff altogether. living in the Northwest, we face many challenges, not least that sometimes, you know, our healthcare is provided from Galway or Dublin, and that is a challenge to get up and down if you have your own vehicle. But many people have to use public transport and become incredibly reliant on it. That just seems to be a health tax, if you want to describe it like that, of living in the Northwest. It's tough enough if it goes well, but it's particularly nasty if it goes wrong. John joins us on the programme now. John, thanks for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Not too bad at all. And just an apology, John. I was forwarded on your original post on this, but I didn't get... I was so busy yesterday evening, I didn't get access to it to share it. So my apologies in the first instance. There was a resolution, though, thanks to it being shared on social media. But what did your mum go through yesterday?
My mother, she goes to Dublin every 6 weeks for treatment, and she travels with bus air every 6 weeks. Most of the time, everything is okay, but this is the second time now my mother's been put in a situation. She got the bus yesterday at 3:15 to come to Lifford. The bus stops in Monaghan bus station. It's supposed to stop for 15 minutes if you look at the timetable. My mother got out of the bus. She went to the toilet. When she came back out of the toilet, the bus was gone.
Right. And what about her stuff she was travelling with? Like, did she? I presume she has to take a bag with her down there?
Yeah, her bag was still in the bus, and my father had to drive to Lifford to get her bag off the bus. And the bus driver had very little to say, just didn't really care.
Was it put to him? Was it put to him at that stage, John? Was it put to him that he left after 3 minutes and not the 10 or 15 minutes that he's supposed to wait?
Yes, my father had said to him, "You know, you left my wife behind. I'm here to get her bag. You know, you're supposed to stay a certain amount of time in Monaghan," but he just had nothing to say to my father. And it's just not on. As I say, this is the second time it's happened. The first time my mother was on with you about 6 months ago. it happened in Bus Aras, where the bus driver wouldn't take her on because she hadn't booked her ticket online, and refused to take her on even though there were seats on the bus. So she rang home and one of us booked a ticket online for her. And she had to wait 2 hours, 2.5 hours in Bus Aras to get the next bus home.
And when I was chatting to your mum, was she not talking to about others were being led away in front of her and stuff like that as well?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's
that was
right,
insult to injury, I remember that. Yeah, indeed. So, like, I wouldn't like to be stranded in Monaghan. You know, my bag's away. Thankfully, she has a mobile phone and a way of getting in contact. But, it's a very unpleasant experience, and it's a very unpleasant call to get that your mum is stuck in Monaghan.
Well, my mother's 79 years of age. You know, any woman at that age should not be treated in that respect. It's just not on. I rang Complaints Department in Dublin, and it's like talking to a machine. Oh, we're very sorry for the inconvenience. You know, there's another bus coming at 18:40. She can get that bus. She can pay to get on that. And I says, are you having a laugh? My mother pay to get on another bus? I demanded that a taxi come and lift her and take her to Lifford, but that wasn't happening. And I says, I want to speak to your senior. And she says, hold on the line. I was waiting 10 minutes. And then at that stage, my mother had rang me to say that she had got another bus, a private bus had pulled up, Corn buses in Donegal. A lovely man, my mother says, and was unhappily took her to Lifford and just couldn't do enough for her, you know. So,
but that was just a stroke of luck. Now, I mean, all of these buses are monitored in their movement all of the time, their speed and all that type of stuff. Like, did anyone at Bus Éireann say, we're going to look to see how long the bus was there for? You know what I mean? Was there any sort of customer care to say, right, we're going to look into this and we'll get back to you. We're going to find out what went wrong here and we'll contact you or we'll contact your mother.
I rang customer care, and they says, I told them the situation. She wanted my email address, and she says, somebody will email you. I says, I don't want email. I says, I want to speak to somebody. It's just not on. Mm-hmm. You know, got an email with an apology the first time. An apology is easy done. Just, I'm sorry, you know, it won't happen again. But it is happening again. My mother went down to the bus station, and there's a guy in behind the desk. And my mother says, where's the bus gone? Oh, it's gone. And, you know, the bus is supposed to stay 10 to 15 minutes. Oh, I don't work for Expressway. You know, it's nothing to do with me. But my mother says, you know, you're working for Bus Air and you're in the station here. This is what you do. But he didn't want to know. He just passed the book on. I'll ring complaints, put on a complaint.
See, another thing too, and it reminds me of the first time when I talked to your mum, was that the responses don't feel human at all, in that they're not seeing a 78-year-old woman stranded an awful long way from home. They're seeing, they're just seeing a lump of flesh and bones. I mean that with no disrespect at all. It's not like that fella should go, oh my God, right, okay, so your 80-year-old mother's stranded here, or, well, right, let's see what we can do. It's, there just doesn't seem to be any personal care. And I also remember from the last conversation 6 months ago when your mother was affected last, that what happened was we're going to engage directly with the customer. And that kind of meant we were out of it then. Do you know what I mean? Once we got that response from Bus Air, it was like, okay, well, hopefully some good will come from this. But yet here we are. Here we are again.
The engagement from the customer was send an email. Oh, we're sorry for the inconvenience. We'll speak to the driver and we'll see that it doesn't happen again. You know, it's easy. Write up an email and send it off. And then that's just good luck to you, you know.
And at the end of the day, too, like, who's going to get off to go to the bathroom in Monaghan anymore? You know what I mean? You couldn't risk it. So, you're going to sit in it till you get to Donegal? I'm not talking about your mum. I wouldn't be that disrespectful. But, I mean, if you can't guarantee that the bus it's a 10-minute stop, you know, then toilet breaks or grabbing a bottle of water are no longer an option then.
Yeah, that's it. Well, if you look at the timetable, you know, from Dublin to Letterkenny, it says on the timetable that the bus gets in at a certain time and it goes in 15 minutes later. And that's not happening. And as I say, my two sons, they travel down regularly to Dublin and they refuse to go Bus Air. They always go John McGinley. And it's just the service, the difference in the service is just second to none with John McGinley. And as I say, there's Curran Transport or Curran Buses. Thanks to them for taking my mother home yesterday evening. My father sat in Lifford. He waited another hour and a half before my mother got back to Lifford. So he had to sit in Lifford waiting on my mother. And it's just not on. And I say apologies. No, it's just not good enough at this stage.
See, another thing too, John, we need to be clear on, and the reason we need to be clear on this is so that people know, or if it needs to change, do the drivers use that 15-minute window to pick up time? In other words, if they roll into Monaghan 5 or 10 minutes late, do they depart at the scheduled time? Or, you know, do they make up time so they don't arrive in Lifford late? I think it needs to be clear. Is that a 15-minute stop? Or can they go after 2 or 3 minutes, to make up those 10 or 12 minutes? I think that it'd be important to know that too, because that needs to change if it's not clear.
Yeah, of course. I know Dublin is hard to get out of any day, and I'm sure they do lose time. But, you know, they would need to look at their timetables if that's happening on a regular occurrence. But, you know, people do need to go to the bathroom, and it's too bad that, you know, 3 minutes, 3-4 minutes max, and the bus is gone. You know, they can't wait for you. It's just, it's not on. Mm-hmm. And it has to, things have to change. You know, I say that my guys get John McGinley, they stop in Monaghan as well. They stop for 10 to 15 minutes and they make sure everybody's back on the bus.
Well, at the least, John, if I saw someone, maybe you can't do it for everyone, I don't know, but to say, just as people were exiting, if you're getting back on the bus, we're leaving in 3 minutes, or is this your final destination? Mm-hmm. A little bit of conversation. Yeah. I'm not sure how quick on your feet your mother is, but it must have been clear that she was an older lady who's on her own. Would it have hurt to say, oh, by the way, Mrs. or however someone might wants to, I'm making up time here, so I'm going to have to pull off in 3 minutes. Even that little bit of personal interaction perhaps would have avoided any of this.
Yeah, as my mother said, you know, as she gets it every 6 weeks, there's some lovely drivers. You know, I'm not going to tarnish them all with the same brush, but, you know, there are some drivers out there and they're just not so nice people. And she's experienced them all, so she has. And they need to be educated a bit more in customer service and the way they treat their customers. Even ringing customer service yesterday in Dublin, it was just like talking to the wall. It's just like talking to a machine. It's "Oh, I'm very sorry for the trouble and the inconvenience," but sorry is not good enough. You know, action needs to be taken. And you know, telling me, "Oh, she's going to have to wait for the next bus, which comes in at 18:40, and your mother can pay to get on that," I just says, "Are you having a laugh?" Mm-hmm. No, that's not happening.
The thing too is, look, you know, I'm sure bus drivers have to put up with a fair bit of abuse. You know what I mean?
Oh, of course.
But we can't lose our, at the very least in all of this, we can't lose our respect for an older person, you know. Or
exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because when you lose that, that's it. And that bus driver wouldn't be sitting in the seat if it wasn't for his mum and dad. And hopefully they're alive and older people too. You know, so of course, yes, there's going to be young ones that might talk crap or spit or whatever it might be, but I think you can't lose the fact that maybe older people deserve a little bit more respect and consideration in this whole world. All right, John, we have made our inquiries to Boss Erin. I know you're doing so too. I'm sorry that your mum's having to go through something like this again. Right, okay.
She doesn't want to go back on it. She just says, "Oh, they'll be saying, 'Oh, that crying woman on again.'" But I'm just taking it very, I'm just annoyed and upset about it. And I was very upset yesterday even when she rang. Whenever she rang me, I just said, "Something wrong," the way she just called me name. And she was upset, so she wasn't really stressed. And it just can't happen again, you know.
Okay, thanks, John. I appreciate your time this morning. Mary, good morning to you.
How are you, Greg?
I'm okay, Mary. Right, so you've a little bit more to add to this story.
I was on the bus. I was just sitting behind the driver, actually, on that bus. Mm. And when we got to Monaghan, he said 2 to 3 minutes only. And a few people got off. Now, I didn't notice his mother getting off, mind you, or whoever, the woman I didn't know, and didn't know his two fellas getting off. But they got off, and I remember them getting on very quick. And he said, "I'll beat the horn before I leave." And he did do all those things. Now, would you hear it? I don't know. But he did beep the horn and everything like that. Like, it was tight on the 2 to 3 minutes. And I remember another girl coming up and asking, could she get off? And he said no, because it's 2 to 3 minutes. At that stage, she was coming up, say, after the 3 minutes, Greg, you know, the way on the thing. But I think maybe you have the point there that maybe that's where they're making up their time. Because, you know, normally they would have stopped for 10 or 15 minutes the other way. But as I said, I was booked on a later bus and he very kindly let me on in Dublin. So to me, he was brilliant. And that's been honest, because I'd have had to sit for 2 hours.
Yeah, Mary, it's very important that all sides of this are discussed. And that's why it's great to have you on. And as well, too, with pre-booking of tickets, they probably have a fair idea if there's any seats or availability for people to get on in Monaghan. You know what I mean? So, now, when it was stated, and in fairness to the driver, you say he did state it, and obviously John's mum didn't hear, like, is that just shouted? Like, does he just say, "Right, folks, 2 or 3 minutes here"? There's no speaker or anything, is it?
So if you're in the back, you possibly might not hear it. No, and I think she was only, because when her bag was picked up, I think she was only the third seat back or whatever it looked to be. Because I saw the man getting in to pick up her bag. He didn't go too far down. But maybe she just didn't hear him. That could be it, right enough. Maybe it'd be better doing it on a mic or something that you could hear it through the whole bus, maybe, or whatever. But that was the thing. And I feel maybe he was making up time, because that's what happened there on the bus. But in saying that, we had another driver going up in the morning. He was lovely too, very helpful. And they do know how many's booked on. They know how many spaces I have. They know all that, because I have it all on this computer the fellow was telling us the other way.
And this is not to take away from John's mother's experience, but Mary, your experience is actually that this driver was accommodating to you and actually let you on.
Definitely.
Which meant you didn't have to wait on in Dublin. Isn't it crazy how people can have different experiences?
I would have had to wait for the 4 to 5 bus, and he let me on that one there, and was absolutely brilliant. Because you know, 2 hours sitting in bus hours and 2 hours.
Would you stop? I know.
So to be fair to him as well, I just said to be fair to him.
Okay. But then maybe...
Is that all right, Greg?
Yeah, no, and Mary, and I think maybe we agree, maybe assist... But then again, you see the amount of people sitting on buses with headphones on. I'm not saying John's mum was, but you know, even if there were a speaker system, how do you avoid it? Okay, listen, it's good to get the balance. I appreciate it, Mary. Thank you very much indeed.
No problem. Thanks,
Greg. All right, bye-bye. Okay, so that's Mary's experience on the same bus. Bus errand are dreadful for the time keeping. I went to Lifford to catch the express in Dublin. The scheduled time in Lifford was 3:45 p.m. I was there 5 minutes early, but the bus was gone. Ulster bus drivers, on the other hand, keep to the exact minute on the express routes. It's a toughie. Like, even coming to work here, I don't travel the distance. I don't travel the distance that the buses that we're talking of travel. But my arrival time here, or the time it takes to get here, can vary greatly. So it could be 10 minutes in a difference. So if I come out of, say, for instance, as an example, Stranoller, and there's a tractor, as there was this morning, between Stranoller and the Kilgross Junction, that's an extra 5 or 6 minutes onto the journey. If I'm behind someone doing 70 between Kilgross Junction and Drumkeen, that's another 4 or 5 minutes later you are. So I suppose there are challenges in using the roads that bus drivers have to deal with in time they have to make up. Okay, we kind of got to the bottom of that. I don't know where that leaves us in that story. It'll be interesting what Bus Erin has to say. In fairness to the driver, Mary had a good experience. In fairness to John, his mum didn't hear him saying this will be a 2 to 3 minute stop. Apparently he said he'd bib the horn as well. So I don't know where that leaves us. I was on the bus yesterday. The driver stopped in Monaghan for 5 minutes, barely enough time to go to the bathroom. Another, Bus Erin is a disgrace. If McGinley's bus is on her route, they're far more professional company to deal with. Hope that lady is okay. A lot of people actually talking about McGinley's. McGinley's always check to make sure they have the same number back on the bus that got on before he leaves Monaghan. Could Expressway not do the same? Hi, Greg. Travel with Jay McGinley, if McGinley's as well. His drivers are helpful and friendly. Can't do enough for us or enough for you. The 32 bus coming from Dublin at times will not stop in Lifford, says another listener. 086 60 25,000. Keep them coming into us. Some of your comments already this morning. This lady's case against X is an example of hard cases make tough laws. Obviously, no one should say such things, but also all speech should not be stifled because of the few bad apples. Someone being offended should not result in the loss of freedom for the whole country. Yeah, I get where you're coming from. It's a tough old space now that we're in because, you know, You can say someone, a politician, is, oh, well, you're this and you're that as it relates to their political life or what have you. But a lot of these comments that are received are personal and insulting. And I think there are people sort of get it off on feeling they've upset someone. Is it true, Ireland and 8.5 million to Israel on military equipment, then the government should be dragged out and dealt with? What's the church's opinion on the government if the above headline is true? That comes in from Liam. Liam, I saw that in the papers this morning. Didn't get a chance to read it, but I will and bring that to you. A few more comments before we take a break. Greg, I have a medical condition where I need to go to the toilet regularly. The same happened to me with a driver not waiting for me in Monaghan. They should not be allowed to limit reduced break times. 2 to 3 minutes is unreasonable. And you see, this is where it moves on to this point, and this is where maybe the drivers don't have a say. If you're stopping for 10 or 15 minutes, then maybe you should stop for 10 or 15 minutes. Getting on a bus earlier, in my view, is not comparable with needing to toilet in a four-hour journey. Drivers should do a head count before they leave. The same thing happened to my 85-year-old late uncle a number of years ago on his return to Letterkenny from hospital in Dublin. Wouldn't happen on a John McGinley bus, they say. And on it goes. Okay, I have to take a quick break. Our next guest will be joining us very shortly. Greg, I travelled to Letterkenny with McGonagall's from Buncrana and mentioned to the driver that the theatre team were waiting on me to operate as soon as I arrived and was already 30 minutes late. So the driver drove me up to the front door of the hospital. I often travel to Dublin Hospital with McGinley bus and they always count the passengers on and off. The 64 bus stops in Sligo on the way to Galway for a break. You have to run to the toilet and run back out again or the bus is gone. Almost missed the bus myself one day. It was starting to drive off when I got outside again. The breaks that the Bus Erin give seem to all be dependent on their timetable, which isn't acceptable. So is a break a break? You know what I mean? Are you stopping for 10 minutes or you're not? I think that's really where we're getting into the nitty-gritty of this. If a bus is carrying 30 or 40 passengers and even half want to use the toilet, would a 15-minute stop be adequate? I don't think half of them want to get off. I think, like, if it's going to be 10 minutes, it's 10 minutes. It's reasonable. Some people may and may not. Like, we're all different. That's the thing you see as humans. We're all different. Some people actually medically have to go to the toilet. Others can hold on. It's, you know, we're all different. It seems to be like, sorry, I was going to say something else, but I won't. It seems to be a given the bus there, and buses are always late and not according to the timetable. I made inquiries recently at the bus station in Strabane about the Dublin to Letterkenny bus, and the lady at reception told me those buses are always late. In fact, the bus was a full half hour late that particular day, and maybe that is where they're trying to make up the time there. Alton has emailed us and says, I would just like to comment about the full redress single played by Greg on the show yesterday. What a creative and innovative way to highlight this crisis, which impacts directly and indirectly on so many people in Donegal and beyond. Hopefully this single will spread the message even further and help spur on all of those who've been fighting this unfair fight for far too long. Well done, and a huge thanks to those involved in creating this song. That's from Alton Coyne from Carndonagh. Hi, Greg. The Irish Times is reporting that the Irish government has spent €8.5 million on Israeli surveillance drones and military equipment, which is currently being used in the genocide in Gaza against the Palestinians. Why is this happening at all? Is the government preparing for war, perhaps against its very own citizens? Raymond says that. I'm not sure that's the situation. But anyway, an update on the situation at St. Joseph's Hospital yesterday. We revealed to you that primary care physiotherapy services were no longer to be delivered at the hospital, and that information was delivered quite late to those who give the care and are receiving the care. And it's not great news, and I'll come back to that in a moment, because we're joined on the programme now by Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. Good morning to you, Taoiseach. Thank you very much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me. Good morning to listeners.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Now, March 8th is a big day, two referendums. I just notice a lot of the discourse is about, well, if the main parties are advocating a yes vote, that's enough for me to vote no. Is that always the case? Is that something of a particular concern, that maybe people aren't reading up on this and just maybe advocating for a no vote because of those that are sort of advocating for a yes?
I suppose there's always a bit of that in a referendum, and I remember that with marriage equality and the referendum on the 8th, that people would say that if all or most of the political parties are for it, then there must be something fishy or there must be something up. But what I would say back to that is it's actually not about us. It's not about the politicians or the political parties. The Constitution belongs to the people. We can't change it. Only the people can in a referendum. So it's not about us. It's about the million people, including tens of thousands of people in Donegal who are in a one-parent family or in a family that's led by grandparents or cohabiting or guardians, and they're not recognised as a family. That's not right, and that's one thing we want to change. And then also, particularly on the care amendment, to remove the outdated sexist language that talks about a woman's life within the home and mothers neglecting their duties in the home in favour of something much more positive, which is the care amendment, recognising the value of family care, whether it's inside the home or not inside the home, and putting a new obligation on the government and future governments to strive to support that. So that's what it's about. It's about families,
on that
it's
first,
about carers.
On that first
not,
example
not really
you gave,
us.
On that first example you gave, I think people are concerned that what they're voting on is not necessarily what might happen. So you give the example of a single parent family. So that's a family, right? So then say that parent meets another person who has two children. Does the person they meet, are they in two families? Which is the family? How is all that determined?
Yes, so initially it can be determined in law, in bills, legislation passed by the Oireachtas, and if there's a hard case or a dispute, that would be adjudicated in the courts. That's already the case. That's how our system works. But if you look at the term durable relationship, what does it mean? If it's not a word we pulled out of the dictionary, it's already there in European law and in our own national laws. And it means a relationship that is long-term, that's committed, that's caring. And I think it's very clear that in my mind that a one-parent family, a mother or perhaps even a single father bringing up kids, that they're a family to me. And we already recognise that to a certain extent, in social welfare law and tax law, for example. But the Constitution doesn't. And this, to me, is mainly constitutional catch-up. It's updating a document that was written in the 1930s by people born in the 1800s. It just doesn't reflect the values of our time.
How will we find out what a durable relationship is? Because there are concerns that this could have, knock-on effects for, migration law, pensions, family law, which is already, you know, very difficult at the moment. Like, how will all that be resolved and sorted out so we get a clarity as to what a durable relationship is, and then we find out what implications on some of those areas that I mentioned it might actually have?
Yes, so a durable relationship is something that's long-term. It's committed. It's there to last. It's caring. We already know what it is. For example, in a one-parent family, I don't think people need to be explained what that is, or a family led by a grandparent or a guardian. All that's in the law already. And when it comes to cohabitees, in 2010, we passed legislation to say that people who are cohabiting have certain responsibilities to each other if they're together for more than 5 years, or 2 years if there are children involved. And essentially, we want the Constitution to be updated to reflect that.
Okay, now we can't go through it all, but just one question, and we kind of touched on it a little earlier
I should say, though,
yes, go ahead.
I think two points of clarification that might be important. The Constitution does and will continue to protect the institution of marriage. So it's not saying that durable relationships are the same as marriage. It'll still be possible for the government to discriminate in favour of married people when it comes to things like, inheritance, for example, or tax or social welfare. And then the other area that's really important to say is every durable relationship doesn't become a family. You know, lots of people have business relationships, for example, and they're durable, but that's not a family. In order to be a family, being a durable relationship isn't enough. It also needs to be a social unit in society, has to be open, acknowledged, you know, can't be some sort of, you can't accidentally find yourself in a durable relationship, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I get that. And as I say, the courts might end up deciding this, but just one theoretical question, like how it would work in terms of, could you be a member of two families? For an example, if I left my partner and took up with someone else and we were established as a family and there were a court case or what have you, what might the first family end and the second family begin, if that makes sense?
I suppose it would really depend what the court case was about. You know, you wouldn't just go to court to be declared a family. That's not how it works. There'd have to be some sort of dispute over something, you know, whether it's a dispute over child maintenance or child protection, but these things happen already. You know, there are lots of people in Ireland who are in a second relationship and pay child maintenance, or there might be a dispute over a house or property. And at the moment, those issues are determined in the courts, and they should be, because circumstances are individual, and you put all the information and the case in front of the judge, and the judge decides.
Mm-hmm. The second referendum proposes to delete.
I don't think the constitutional change in itself will change that fundamentally.
No. The second referendum proposes to delete an existing part of the Constitution and insert new text providing recognition for care provided by family members. Part of the phraseology is that, I'll just read the last bit, and shall strive to support such provision. Why strive? Why not commit? Yeah, you know, surely we should be making a commitment in these areas, not just sort of leaving it open-ended and open to interpretation.
Yeah, well, look, there'll always be different views on the wording. I know some wording that some people prefer was the term reasonable measures, and that was the wording proposed by the Citizens' Assembly. But I think if we'd chosen that, we'd probably be having the same debate. You know, what's reasonable? What do measures mean? So any wording you have will be open to interpretation, open to debate. Strive means to work vigorously. So it will require future governments and this government to work vigorously to improve things for family carers. And the Family Carers Alliance, who represent tens of thousands of carers around the country, are supporting this. Crucially, in the Irish language, and as you know, Irish is the first official language, and I'm conscious that Donegal is a Gaeltacht county, and people will know the term dreim, which is to climb, to go up the ladder, if you like. So it puts an obligation on future governments to keep improving things for family carers. It's not an absolute obligation, because we do need to give the Oireachtas, the TDs, the people you elect, some discretion here. And if you put in language that was really, really strong, let's say around carers, but you had no language around cancer treatment, that would put the Oireachtas in an invidious position where, you know, they wouldn't be able to make a fair judgment call.
A caller wants to know, why is it only family members being included when there are lots of people who are non-family members who take care of people?
Yeah, that's a good point. I suppose, generally speaking, when care is provided outside of the family context, it's done on a commercial basis. So it might be, you know, a company that runs a nursing home, or it might be a company that runs a home care service, or it might be somebody who's employed as a care professional or a care worker. And we think there is a difference between care that's provided by families each to each other and something that's done on a commercial basis or a professional basis. And we would be reluctant about giving certain professions a status in the Constitution that we don't give to others, or certain companies, for example, status and protection in the Constitution that we wouldn't give to other companies. I think that would open up lots of difficult questions.
Why was the word mother removed? That seems to have been a problem for an awful lot of people. Mother is no longer in the Constitution. And it's not that people didn't want to see this change, but rather language could have been added.
Yeah, so mother is only in the Constitution in the context of mothers not having to neglect their duties in the home. And that's where it's being removed in favour of care, which is can be mothers or fathers, can be men or women. As you say, it could be other family members. And that's the change that we're making. The word woman, of course, will remain in the Constitution. It'll still be there on three occasions. The only place where we're taking mother out is, again, when it talks about a woman's life within the home. The term parent will remain in the Constitution seven times. And, of course, parents can be mothers or fathers.
What's your view on the people like Elon Musk using his X platform to have his say on this internal vote, advocating a no-no vote?
Well, look, anyone's entitled to have their opinion. I'm not sure to what extent a billionaire living in California will be affected by our constitution or knows very much about it, but it's a free world and people are entitled to offer their opinions.
There's an awful lot of conversation, and it is related to this, and I won't keep you any longer. I know you're busy, whereby there was a press conference earlier this week, and mid-question, you and the fellow government leaders walked off stage. Is it because you didn't like who was asking the question, or was it because time had run out? Or because we also heard from a News Talk journalist who I think had a tete-a-tete with, or however one might describe it, claiming they had their hand up and were ignored. Firstly, why did you walk off mid-question? And are you or your government colleagues being selective as to who the answer question's from?
Yeah, that's not what happened. The press conference was over. I had to go and prepare for leaders' questions in the Dáil. And it's never the case that everyone who turns up at the press conference or any meeting gets to ask their question. In that case, the person wasn't called to put their question, but shouted out anyway. The press conference had ended at that stage. But that particular news outlet, I'm afraid, I do answer their questions pretty regularly, is quite disingenuous on these kind of issues. We don't know how it's funded, and also was very much trying to drag extraneous issues into the referendum.
So to some extent, you did make a conscious decision as to who was asking the question as you walked off. You've kind of referenced that.
No, well, I don't make the decision. The way it works is that there's a press officer who chairs the meeting, or chairs the press conference. It lasts for a certain period of time and ends a certain period of time, and everyone doesn't get their question in. Mm. We just wouldn't have 3 hours to do that. Mm-hmm. But what they'll do sometimes is they'll shout their question out anyway.
But you're saying just generally going forward, you don't make choices, you don't make decisions based on whether you like an editorial policy or however anyone might be funded. That's not you don't factor that in when answering questions.
No, what we will generally do is go to the main news outlets for the obvious reasons, because they have the biggest coverage. And if we're in a particular county, obviously, we'd prioritise and make sure the local media based in that county would get priority if time is limited. But, you know, I do need to be frank with you about this. There are one or two news organisations in the country now at the moment. They're based online. They're not acting in good faith. It's not about informing their subscribers, if they even have any. There's a political agenda there, and they're pretty upfront about that.
All right, OK. Thank you very much for your time this morning, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. I'm sure those outlets and their supporters might see things differently, but that's the Taoiseach's views on the record there. OK, news is going to be late. It would already be late now, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show in just a couple of minutes.